Good evening. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 Community Radio out of Round Mountain in Bella Vista. And this is Jim Dowling. And I'm going to kick off a new show. It's going to be all about Shasta Equal Justice Coalition. And I have two guests here in the studio, Sharon Bree Solara and Ted Couch. And they're going to talk about the coalition and what they do, what they stand for. And so, Sharon, why don't you get us started here? And we'll go from there.
All right. Thanks so much for having us, Jim.
Oh, thank you.
The Shasta Equal Justice Coalition first came together in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd and in response to our concerns around what had happened and around reforms that we saw were needed in our communities. And over time, we developed a vision of equity and justice for every community member, inclusive of all identities, backgrounds, or circumstances. We're a network of organizations and individuals committed to fair and equal justice, and we do that through advocacy, education, and strengthening partnerships. And Ted Couch, who we're speaking to today, having our conversation with, is co-chair of the SEJC, one of the first member organizations, and is also a representative, one of the founders of Reinvest Reading. So we wanted to have him here to talk about his experience and his organization as one of the many diverse organizations that are part of the coalition. So Ted, I thought we'd begin with you telling us a little bit about Reinvest Reading, how it came about, what the group gathered around initially.
Sure, yeah. So much like the SEJC, we started in 2020, in the summer after the George Floyd murder and the protests that sprung up in the wake of that, and also the murders of other individuals that year, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and others. And really, there was a lot of energy, a lot of passion around these issues, recognizing the problems that they were in our country, and as we saw with others, you know, around the world, really. And we came together as a group who wanted to do something tangible here locally, right? We wanted to create some sort of concrete change that we thought would help these issues, issues of unequal justice, police brutality. And so really just kind of put out a call on social media and, you know, connected through other channels that way, and folks who had a desire for that to try and have some sort of concrete change here locally. We all came together and, you know, we started off doing this basic things you do when you form a group, coming up with a name, mission statement, you know, rules and regulations, communication styles, graphics, those sorts of things. But then we really, once we established that, got down to it, is what are we trying to do here? What is the concrete change we're after? And there were a lot of different things out there, ideas that people were putting forth about how to do this, different sort of police reforms, officers having to use body cams, advocating for different elected officials, district attorneys who would have different policies which could enact and have greater justice and accountability. There are things like the 8 Can't Wait platform that a group put out about 8 policies that would, or if enacted, were demonstrated to really reduce instances of police violence. The one that we really came together and debated and thought about rationally, that, hey, what is the thing that has the greatest impact for change, was the call to defund police budgets. And for us, it was defunding and reallocating to other community programs, which we thought would have a much more efficient and effective impact in the realms of justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. We've seen in the community, and even among members of the SEJC, there's different understandings of what people mean when they say defund. And
sure.
And Reinvest Reading has reinvest in its name. So I'm wondering if you could speak to that, what you all are saying, and to respond to the critique that often comes up, that to say defund the police means you want the police abolished.
Sure. Well, yeah, and I can speak for myself. Everyone has a lot of different opinions about it. I think, I guess going back to the beginning of your question. So for us and our understanding, right, we use that term in our mission statement, defund, because it was one that had been thought through, established, and created by activists nationwide, you know, long before we came about. So the meaning behind it to us very specifically is not to defund is not to abolish. Now, there are a lot of people out there, and I think they have compelling arguments, if and we can get into that potentially about why one might want to abolish the police one day in the future, right? I don't stand for that. But defunding doesn't mean taking the money and throwing it away. It means, it really is, the part of it is, or part and parcel of it is reinvesting, right? Is taking it into a place where we think has a greater potential for a better impact and can decrease instances of violence, can improve quality of life. And honestly, we really believe increase and improve the lives of police officers. And the reason we think that is that if you look at the way police budgets and responsibilities have gone really nationwide, is that there's been a growth in that. And not because there's necessarily been a specific increase in the crimes that police are here to solve, but because we've had all these societal ills and we've kind of just chucked them at the police to solve, right? Petty crime, homelessness, drug addiction. In some many jurisdictions, police have to catch stray dogs, right? So to us, it's saying if you're somebody who we are tasking with an extreme responsibility, which is the authority to use extreme violence against your own citizens in order to keep the peace, which sometimes is unfortunately necessary, but it is, and you have that deep training and you're compensated well for that, why are we going out there and making you catch stray dogs, right? Let's take the budget that we're allocating to police to catch stray dogs, right? Or to deal with truancy or to deal with homelessness and mental illness and put it to someone who's specifically trained for that so that they can focus on what they're best at, police can focus on what they're best at, and let's like remove the opportunity for misunderstandings, for confusion, for split-second decisions where folks who do have a badge and a gun and qualified immunity might make a mistake that could lead to somebody losing their life or other instances of violence. Mm-hmm. So for us, you know, defunding is the term because that's what it was come up as. We chose to use reinvest because that's really what we think is the most important piece of that. And I think people have different ideas about what it says out there. You know, a lot of folks these days, unfortunately, I think, are more interested in taking sound bites and headlines mm-hmm. and running with those versus actually getting at the issues and what they mean. Mm-hmm. But for us, really, the reinvestment, reallocation piece is critical to what it means to defund the police. And so that's what we've stuck with. Now, as things go on, I'm very interested. And as the movement evolves to what terminology do we use to really get the message across more? And we're open to how that evolves, but that's really what it means for us.
Yeah, thank you. That's really helpful. And there are several questions in there I sure. want to follow up on, but part of it, what were the priorities for reallocation or reinvestment? What kind of investments do you feel are most important in our community? You spoke to some of them.
Sure, yeah, and there's so many.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the best example that I can kind of give that we're very passionate about, and it's something that the city has kind of taken some baby steps towards already, which is great, which is sort of in the area of mental health response, crisis response. There's a program that's been instituted, I want to say it's been around for about 20 years in Eugene, Oregon, which is called the CAHOOTS program, which was developed in partnership with a local medical organization. And when emergency calls are received, the 911 operators will ask them, you know, specifically what it's about. And if they hear that it has to do with what they think is a mental health call, or something to that effect, they will divert that directly to a team that is trained to address those problems, right? And so there is funding that goes to that, and those folks will go and deal with those sorts of issues, right? So I know, it's not unique to Reading around the country, sadly. I think we're seeing a lot of these problems, and there's a laundry list of reasons, and I think big debates that everyone's having about why are we seeing increases in homelessness, mental health, drug addiction, et cetera, but unfortunately it's here and we have to deal with it. So what's the best way to deal with it, right? And I think the program in Eugene has been, and I don't have the data in front of me, I wish I did, but has been shown over the years to actually save the city of Eugene money mm-hmm. because police, who again, need to be highly trained and compensated, are not wasting their time, frankly, going off these other calls. They can spend it on something else. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have such a high police budget. And also it's decreased instances of violence and it's helped some of these people get the help that they need, I think, where in some cases they might have been thrown in jail. In other cases, they're seen by mental health professionals and that sort of helped the cycle. So that's one we're really passionate about. I know the city of Reading has started that with their crisis intervention response team. It's a little different in that they have armed police officers who are on the team, which I think is a good step and is necessary in some situations where if there's a mental health call and part of the call is there's a weapon there or there is a concern of violence, well, you're not going to send someone who is unarmed or, you know, someone who is not a police officer to that situation. So in this case, I think it's a good one. I think that's the place that could really be expanded. And let's expand that to have folks who are, which where it's funded by the community, by the city, by the county, et cetera, but who are unarmed and are really specifically trained with that. So that's an area that we're passionate about, and I think is really a win-win, and I hope to, you know, evangelize and get more people on board with. But other areas, you know, that are really simple, and I think when people have their base needs met, there's less opportunity for crime, right? There's less opportunity for them to resort to the problem. So housing, food, jobs, really simple things that, you know, we have a strong economy these days. It's going like gangbusters, but with that, there's all the other problems we see, inflation, et cetera. So you don't necessarily see, I feel like, as much social mobility or security as maybe we've had in previous generations, and people fall through. So let's invest in that. Let's make sure people have full, adequate access to housing. They have access to good paying jobs. They have access to food. And when you have those things, there's less opportunity or need, right, for the type of situations where you might have to encounter a police officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're really speaking to the systemic nature of, you know, what are the root causes of some of the things that we're finding ourselves having to respond to.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're also bringing up at the SCJC, we did have Hill Country came and spoke about some of the work that they're doing with that. And both the sheriff has come and Chief Bill Schuler have been very, had a lot of praise for the work of both Hill Country and those kind of efforts going forward. What more would you like to see in terms of support for those efforts?
Sure. Well, I would like to see very specific investments from the city of Reading, from Shasta County, into those programs. Again, you know, paying specifically for unarmed, the title doesn't necessarily matter, but they've been called mental health counselors, crisis intervention folks. And there are some now, but those aren't supported from the city and the county in the way that I believe that they should. If you look at kind of the general fund from the city of Reading, you'll see it's somewhere north of 40% goes directly to police budgets, right? And that's the thing that the city council really has jurisdiction over. Like, what can you spend? That's your general fund. But they don't spend a dime really on these issues in the way that I believe that they should. So I think it's funding a full, full-time position for this, funding the needed resources, vehicles, you know, really in the same things that our police department has. It's just you're not out there potentially going to engage in violence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another dimension of investing or reinvesting that you've spoken to quite a bit is a budget, a personal budget, a city budget, a county budget as a moral document. Mm-hmm. And that's language that not everyone uses.
Sure.
What do you mean by that? How does looking at a budget as a moral document help us to take on some of these issues in a different way?
Yeah, I think there's different ways to look at it, and I'd encourage everybody with some of the things I'm saying, if some of it strikes a chord with you, to go out and do some research, because I'm borrowing from other people's ideas here. These are not original TED ideas. So, but budgets are moral documents. So it really, I mean, if you think about it yourself, if you go out and you work your 8 hours plus a day, whatever it is, that's your blood and sweat and your toil, and you're compensated for that. You earn a living. Right, so that's some of your life that you're put in, and that's your money, and that's, you know, so what do you use that for to get by? What do you use that for to grow and to evolve your life, right? Because that is some of your life that you've put in, and where is it going to go? I would, you know, look at a city budget much like you'd look at your personal budget, and you're looking at your own family, right? And so what are the things you're going to focus on for your family to make sure they're taken care of, right? Simple things, and I'd love to, you know, be interested to speak more at some point, right, to get more specifics about how this could go, but taking care of your family, do they have the food they need? Do they have the shelter they need? Are they educated? Are they in a place to really thrive, right? Mm-hmm. Or are we investing more on, the sticks as opposed to the carrots, right, for how we would evolve and thrive as a community? Mm-hmm. How you take care of each other, how you take care of your neighbor, your fellow community member, I'd encourage people to look at how they take care of their own family and what's important to you. What do you want to see them? How do you want to see their lives evolve and hopefully thrive?
Mm, that's beautiful. On the other side of the investment part, reinvesting is about focusing on some of these areas that get at the root causes, that take, in what you were saying, take pressure off law enforcement, help to keep them more safe. On the other side, what are your ideas about what the priority should be when we consider investment for law enforcement?
Sure. So priorities for investing in law enforcement, right? I mean, again, I personally think that law enforcement should be small, but well-trained, well-compensated. And with that, you know, again, in, I think if you look at a lot of the data out there, different cities, you've seen places where over 90% of the calls to police have nothing to do with violent crime, right? And when you're talking about preventing crime, again, I think that that starts way before police are involved at all. So where can police, you know, be of most help? Well, one thing is, yeah, if there's a call, quick response is good. But in addition, right, are we fully staffed in terms of the back end of this, right? When crimes have been committed, investigations, detectives, are people being brought to justice? Because that's important that people have, you know, faith in that, and that if they're wronged, right, the people who do that, commit these violent crimes, will be brought to justice, I think is important. Where else, right? We had a meeting with the chief of police who spoke at one of our events, and we were discussing the crisis intervention response team, I think, with Hill Country. And I remember him saying, not a direct quote, but that when this was kind of coming about and this idea, a lot of the police were really hesitant about it because they're a skeptical bunch by nature, right? And they've, over time, gotten used to it, and now many folks really embrace it as a good idea. Well, I get that folks that police are kind of a skeptical bunch by nature, but if we're to trust them, then we need some of that broken down and some of the cards laid on the table so we can have that trust, as opposed to just saying, we're doing the job right, trust us, let's see it. So let's see some of the data, right? And let's see it raw. We don't need to see it kind of edited to make a political position on some issue that's gone out there. Let's see the crime statistics in Reading very clearly, right? And then individuals can look at that and say, okay, have there been increases here or there? We can look at it for ourselves and understand kind of what's going on. There's been, I think, at a recent city council meeting, you know, with some of the funds, there was a approval of officers having body cameras, which I think has, you know, some potential. There's debate about there about really the efficacy of that, but there is potential for some benefit there. But again, will the data collected by those body cameras be used, you know, just against community members, or will it be used again for justice across all people? So if police officers are doing something illegal on that footage, will the public have access to it, right? Will those people be brought to justice? And does the public have trust that whoever's managing that video data will use it to that effect? Or do we think it's just going to be used to, again, prosecute more people? The police can kind of do with what they want behind the scenes. So I think the police and law enforcement needs to come clear, come to the community very clear, laying cards on the table about this is who we are. Like any institution anywhere around the world, everybody can do better, right? So saying, hey, look, we're doing our best, is what we're doing now. We want to do better. Let us know how we can do better for you. And, you know, here's who we are, right? We work for you. We are compensated via your tax dollars, et cetera. So how can we be better for you? And I think in some of those different areas, if we provide funding to support that, then the police will be able to do that, right? I know there's arguments out there saying, hey, we don't have funds to do it because we're strapped with all the other things we have to do. Okay, well, let's direct the folks to be using funds for that source. And if we really think it's valuable, again, I think there are other places to put the money first, but within police budgets, or if, you know, elected officials, et cetera, think so, let's direct the police to use it for some of these areas, data analysis, investigations, potentially additional training that's locally specific to the community members, the challenges we have here in Reading, mm-hmm. so that officers come to situations with a sense of empathy and understanding of what's going on. Those are all areas where it can be helpful beyond, I think, just hiring more officers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you for bringing up the body cams. That is such a good example of an issue that was talked about initially mm-hmm. at the SEJC, and again, about which members and organizations on the SCJC have different opinions, like you're mentioning. And also, it's another example of your investment, how much investment is in the body cams, what do we know about the back end, what do we know about those policies. And the SCJC speaks a lot, in part because of your co-chair, Eddie McAllister, a lot about trust. And one of our initial versions of the of our vision was about creating the conditions of trust so there can be that collaboration. And that's on both ends.
Sure, absolutely.
So I'm wondering your thoughts about what else can be done from the perspective of citizens and organizations like yours, as well as law enforcement, to help create those conditions of trust.
Yeah, well, you know, I think everyone has to have, to an extent, an open mind, but I think also, you know, you need to look and be sensitive to the history of what's gone on, right? We've heard in our meetings from a lot of community members that say, hey, in our communities, people don't trust the police, straight up. And that's the way it is because they haven't had a reason to. And maybe it's not just police, but a lot of different government agencies and things. And really, if you're asking me, and this kind of goes for all sorts of things out there, I look to the folks who I see have the power and are positions of authority. Again, whether this is locally here and regarding police or really anywhere, as the folks who need to come to the table first, right? If you're a representative of the city, if you are the highest funded entity of our city, which is where we put our money, where we put our focus, and there's a lack of trust, I think that's the entity that needs to come to the table first. So, you know, I think people can come with an open mind. People can come, you know, individual citizens can, you know, make this part of an issue for them and just get involved to an extent more. But I really think the first steps need to be taken, again, by those who are really at the top of the power structure, as opposed to the people who are potentially being shortchanged in this area.
Yeah, and I would like to talk a little bit more about that coming to the table. In the SCJC, we've had a lot of conversations about, especially many of our Native communities, speaking about those relationships, and not just with law enforcement, but those relationships need to be attended to be nurtured, and that people have different opinions about what the table is. You know, the conversations we have in the SCJC, it's not about come to me and tell me what I need to know. It's more of a come to our communities, our very diverse communities, and learn what our concerns are, what our needs are, what our perspectives are. So how do you see that coming together, some ways that that can happen?
Well, I mean, again, I think people, if they're interested in this, should get involved. But I agree with you. I think, you know, it was interesting just for me personally. I know in the immediate aftermath of the George Floyd murder, that I think there was a press conference here locally, I remember, and there was a bunch of elected officials who spoke. It was a great collection of folks in power. I think Doug LaMalfa was there and others. But it was really interesting to me because, you know, I'm not going to remember exactly who was there and spoke, but I think Doug LaMalfa, perhaps the DA, maybe the sheriff, and they all spoke. And it's interesting to me because I think those are the folks that need to listen. And so how do we set up situations where Doug LaMalfa and the DA and the sheriff and the chief of police are sitting there in the front row and the speakers are people from the community and they're just there to listen and take notes? And how do you do your job better? Now, I realize that's a bit of an inversion for how things are always done in the world, right? You have the president of the U.S., the president of this company, the CEO, the whatever, usually giving the speeches. But in this particular instance where we're talking about equal justice, I think we need to find situations where those folks can listen. Mm-hmm. And again, I always appreciate almost everything Eddie says because it's usually comes from a really just wise and experienced place. But yeah, talking about increasing trust. And you hear that from the chief of police and others as well. I think it's important to do that. And again, I think, my opinion, if there's a breakdown or a gap in trust, the folks who have more of the power at the moment need to come to the table first. And I think, I hope they'll do that. I think there's a lot of room there. And the way it'll grow is from the folks up there doing a little more listening at the moment than trying to convince other people of where they stand and what they're about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that on the SEJC, we've been talking about ways of creating those spaces mm-hmm. because listening is really at a premium
yep.
now when we look at our public spaces and how do we...
Totally.
How do we hear to listen to understand?
Yeah.
In that spirit, you mentioned earlier too, encouraging people to learn about what's happening, to go to the original sources,
sure.
to get involved. What would you say to someone who hears our conversation and something resonates with them and they want to become more involved in issues of fair and equal justice?
Sure. Well, you know, we're always accepting new members. We have new people kind of join every week who bring great perspectives, and we need more, right? The idea of equal justice and justice for all means all. We need all people, and from every background group, whatever you represent, you're welcome and you're needed. So for sure, join the SEJC. If you're interested in the things that Reinvest Reading's about, we always love to have new members as well, bring perspective. I think passion's important, and you know, it's not a surprise, or it's not a new piece of news that obviously the passion and the drive that happened in 2020 has waned a bit, and that's okay because these issues aren't going anywhere. They're going to come back. But if you have that, there are structures out there. There are different groups that can help channel that into something more positive. So you know, there's information on websites. There's information on Facebook for our groups, for other groups. Get involved nationally. And I think there's a place for you no matter how you feel in this. And I do think conversation is important. Using your words is important. It breaks down barriers. You know, it's we've had a lot of calls with the SEJC with some of these folks, right? With the DA, with the sheriff, with the chief of police. And it's been illuminating for me, right? A lot of us come with preconceived notions about a lot of stuff. And when you talk to people, it helps to break those down, which is good. And I think dialogue is really important. We have a lot of monologue going on in our society these days. Mm-hmm. So I think that's good. And then, but it's not just about talking, it's about action. That's something we're definitely about. So I hope folks would bring whatever ideas they have and start it with a conversation. We'll end it with some action to hopefully get some things done.
Yeah, thank you, Ted. That's a beautiful way to end. Sure. And you can find out more about Reinvest Reading and others by checking out Shasta Equal Justice on Facebook, and we will be launching our website soon, ShastaEqualJustice.org. Our member organizations, our allies, advocates will be on there, as well as other opportunities to get involved.
Okay. You've been listening to Sharon Brisolara and Ted Couch from Shasta Equal Justice Coalition. Thank you guys so much for coming in, and it's been really interesting for me to be in the background here listening to all you are trying to do. It's wonderful. It's much needed, and let's hope you're laying the foundation for some good things in this community. Okay, you're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain, and if you'd like to donate, why don't you go to that donate button at kkrn.org, hit the donate button, you'll be helping us out in a big way. And hey, you got an old truck or a car, or maybe a motorcycle, a boat, yeah, you could donate that too. Just go to careasy.org and read the instructions. They'll walk you through it, and that money means a lot to keeping our shows on the air. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. Good night.